cannot disappear.
No, he hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian, I'm the guy behind NRL Physio and all the stuff you see on social media. James, my co-host, you're in on a Sunday night. Mate, it seems like we've been playing a bit of like sickness ping pong. You've had it in your household today, I've had it in my household. It's just been pandemonium. It's been one of those weekends for me, but I'm glad to be sitting here with you because we can just sit down and talk about footy for the next hour, and that sounds good to me. How are you, mate?
Going really well, Brian. We were sort of taking turns in the casualty ward with the family, and it's funny that the two dads are staying in good health through it all as well. There must be something to that, just some good, resilient dads just flying the flag for their families who are wounded and looking for better days. But yeah, I've been lucky to come out of it. Sounds like you've just sort of entered the trenches. So we're sort of taking turns and passing the baton to each other. So we better cut that out ASAP because it's not a huge amount of fun. Just FYI.
Mate, all I'm hoping is that it stays well away from us until post-Magic Round. That's all I want. I'm peaking in my fitness and my health for Magic Round, and then the world can do whatever they want to my body at that point, but I just need to be fine for Magic Round. Look, guys, as always, we're on YouTube now, so head on over there if you want to see our beautiful faces talking about all these injuries. This is where you get all your injury analysis in the NRL every week. We talk about the big injury news. We loop it back to NRL Fantasy, Supercoach. If you like what you hear, patreon.com/NRL Physio. For any Patreons listening, I had a few people say this week they weren't aware that there's the chat on there. So we're going, like, I kind of, you know, just offhand stuff, cover a lot of info in there, talking about different injury situations. A few of the questions tonight we discussed in the chat as well over the weekend. So yeah, it's definitely going off in there. So head to either your Patreon app or the website, and the chat function is there. But otherwise, yeah, let's get straight into it. The injuries from round eight now? Yes, round eight.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I mean, I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
The round out wrap-up begins now, Brian. So to start things off as we usually do, we're just going to cover the players who were ruled out after HIAs, or the ones that showed Cat 1 signs that have entered the protocols in the 11-day absence. So Moses Suli, Mo Fodawaker, Kenny Bromwich, and Solomon Alamalo from the West Tigers there on debut. Brian, anyone you want to add a bit more detail there in terms of the HIA absences?
I think Kenny Bromwich was a Cat 2, so, you know, if the Dolphins wanted to, they could potentially challenge that. I think he won't qualify because he's probably had more than 5 concussions. I haven't checked his numbers, but you have to have less than 5, and I would be surprised. I can think of, multiple off the top of my head with Kenny Bromwich over just the last couple of years, and obviously he's a long way into his career. And then Solomon Alamalo was one. It was one of the games I watched this weekend live. And, mate, he got absolutely cleaned up by Katoni Staggs really late in the game. So we don't know if he failed or not, but I just wanted to include him in there because that was one of the more brutal hits from the weekend. I was actually quite surprised that, well, A, they didn't show a replay, but then B, Staggs not charged this morning. So, I don't think we'll ever see a replay now. But, I found that interesting because he got absolutely lit up.
Yeah, I was watching it as well, and I was on the hunt for a replay, but yeah, nothing eventuated there. So probably lucky for the Broncos fans that Katoni isn't facing anything there, and hopefully Solomon Alamalo can get through the protocols ASAP if he did go into them. On the Warriors-Titans game there, no injuries to report out of that one there, Brian, but the Titans get off the nudies. So I guess for all footy fans, it's always good when you see the battlers get going.
I've got
my
Gold Coast Dolphins polo on tonight, yes, in to pay homage to the mighty Gold Coast Titans getting off the bat, off the nudie. And also, mate, I just have to mention it really quickly. I've been on a real tear lately. AJ Brimson, mate. Like, just AJ Brimson's a fullback. Can we just can we just never move him from fullback ever again? Like, he just is a fullback. Until he is crap, just keep him at fullback. Leave him there. I just don't want him at center. I don't want him at six. I just want him at fullback. I know he's not the best fullback in the game, but he's the best fullback at the Titans, surely.
I totally agree. And I think, as we've seen, it's a very important spot in the modern game, Brian, isn't it? I think if you got your best player in that jersey, I think you just have to figure out the rest of it. We'll move on to the Dragons v Roosters. So a couple of names were ruled out pre-game here. So Mikaeli Ravalava had knee soreness. Victor Radley had a hamstring injury. I don't know the grading on that hamstring, Brian. And Dan Tupou was obviously ruled out pre-game as well. Out of this game, Michael Jennings, tricep injury, and Luke Keary with an ankle. Bit to cover here, Brian. Do you want to go through the pre-game injuries to start things off?
Yeah, we'll knock those over. So Mikaeli Ravalava, he was limited in training, and the Dragons have just had knee soreness, so you would assume he'll be back next week. Victor Radley and Daniel Tupou, in no shock to anybody who follows the Sydney Roosters in recent times, there was nothing provided to us other than those two things, just hamstring and knee. So could really be anything, unfortunately. So a bit like you, especially with Victor Radley with the hamstring, no grading given. Daniel Tupou, no, like, you know, it's an MCL or a PCL or whatever, meniscus. So we just don't know with either of those guys, unfortunately. Michael Jennings with the triceps. This is where, you know, the chat came into play, you know, stepping away from whether we should even cover these kind of things, because I copped a bit of heat for covering the likes of Jennings and his triceps injury, but we're an injury show, so let's just go through the injuries. In the chat, we were going through, and he hurt his elbow at the time, and really rare mechanism in that. When I looked at it, I was like, that's a pushing off mechanism. Like, he was trying, he got caught in close, pushed off, and then grabbed. And that's, you know, that's what the triceps does, is it does that elbow extension, that straightening of the elbow. So I was like, I said at the time, I think, you know, Michael Jennings probably torn his triceps there. And it's come out that, yeah, that's looking like the case. He's avoided surgery, so you would assume not a complete tear, but sounds like a pretty high grade partial, because they had to see a specialist to come to that conclusion. So he'll be out, yeah. I think Trent Roberts had said 2 to 3 months, and that probably tracks. Luke Keary with the ankle, this is one that wasn't mentioned in the Roosters. They came out with their pilot medical update the next day, which they just mentioned Jennings. Funny they didn't mention Radley or Tupou, who they, you know, ruled out pregame. So look, like, Luke Keary hasn't been mentioned, which you would hope is a positive, but I went back and had a look. He finished the game hobbling quite heavily. He was in the post-match, he had ice on it, and it definitely did look like a syndesmosis high ankle sprain mechanism. He was kind of reeling back, and his foot got caught in the turf and twisted. So yeah, look, I'm not about to sit here and say Luke Carey's going to be out for any, you know, number of weeks, but I've certainly got more concern about it than I would have if it was one of those typical rolled ankles where he rolled it and aggravated that lateral ankle. Carey's had a history of a few high ankle sprains as well, so yeah, I'm a little bit concerned there that he may have to miss a week or two, but we'll obviously wait until team list, because we won't hear anything else out of the Roosters in the meantime.
Yeah, good shout. One to watch and wait on, especially because the Roosters have been chopping and changing the halves there, and I think finally they look like everything got into gear there. And I think, Brian, before we move on to the next game, I've got to take a few flowers here as a Sam Walker enthusiast, because he had one of the better games we've ever seen. We said off air, Sam, never shave that beard off. Keep it going. Lose the baby face. Get the beard up. Get it going. Keep that up. Whatever he was doing there, whatever he ate pregame, whatever shoe he put on first, he's just got to replicate that week in, week out. I was frothing it. He's got it in him, and that's the thing, is I think when the keys get turned over to him, he's got this sort of game in him. Pretty good with the kicking boots as well, Brian. Hey, I didn't think he hit him too bad. 10 out of 10.
Well, Suwali's been hitting him well. So for him to take it back off Suwali, I thought was impressive enough, and then just killed it.
Yeah, so good. Storm Bunnies was the next game there. So Storm in an absolute bloodbath here. So two injuries of note for the Storm, though, out of the game. So Xavier Coates and Nelson, the soft Solomona, were reported as hamstring injuries there. Xavier Coates, I guess he's going to be probably a touch and go for for Origin selection, isn't he? I guess if we fast forward about 5 or 6 weeks from now, Brian, he might be a little bit touch and go there.
Well, I think he'll be right on the fringe, as you say, in terms of selection. I from what they said post-match, and once again, this is coach speak, so you don't know, Craig Bellamy indicated, oh, we could have put him back on, but because of his history, we didn't want to kind of do that. And for me, yeah, okay, but look, he's a guy who has a history of hamstring strains, so he's had at least two that I went back and had a look at in recent seasons. And then he's just a player, and we've spoken about like Alex Johnston with his, Jason Saab with his, Hamiso Tabuai-Vaiodau with his as well. These guys with the hamstring strains, we know the difficulty of rehabbing a hamstring and getting guys back with that re-injury risk there. But for these kind of players who just rely on that top-end speed and acceleration so much, that the rehab just has to be so spick and span and make sure that they're performing at such a high level to bring that risk right down. Because someone like Nelson Asofa-Solomona, who also has a hamstring injury, I'm almost equally as concerned about Asofa-Solomona because he's only just got back from a hamstring injury in the preseason. So that was why he wasn't selected for the Storm early on. So, but if you put, you know, two identical guys, you know, identical ages, identical injury histories, but one's a big loafing forward like Asofa-Solomona and one's a, you know, a speedy winger like Xavier Coates, I'm probably backing the loafing forward to get back sooner and avoid re-injury better, like almost every day of the week, because yeah, they just don't put the high speed or high trauma strain through their hamstrings that winger will. But yeah, as I said, because of Asofa-Solomona's history, there is more concern there. Like Xavier Coates sounds like, I'd be surprised if they risk him next week, even though they said they'd bring him back out. Yeah, I'd just be surprised if they risked him next week. I think it's more likely the week after. And then Asofa-Solomona, there wasn't much given on the severity there, but he's another one I'd be surprised if they bring him back next week because he's only just come back from Hammy, done another one. Yeah, you'd think even if it was the most minor of minor, they're going to give him a couple of weeks.
Yep, good summary there, Brian. I don't think there's anything else I'd want to touch on from the Storm and Bunnies. We'll move on to the Manly versus Parramatta Eels game. Nothing listed here out of this game injury-wise there. I guess Sean Lane sort of got dropped in that fairly ordinary tackle with Amalu Lokowalu and DCE, but he played out the rest of the game. There wasn't any report of neck injury for Sean Lane after that, Brian, was there, I don't believe?
No, I think he played out the rest of the game, so I think he was all good, but yeah, it was definitely concerning at the time.
Yeah, definitely. Tigers v Broncos was the next one there, Brian. So another W for the good guys there from Brisbane. Out of this one, so Reece Walsh and Anna Reynolds were interesting cases just from a cramping perspective. So we'll touch on that for a little bit. And then other injuries of note, Api Korosau was reported as like a back nerve pain type thing or a back cork, I think was what it was given on the coverage at the time. So a bit of an unusual one there when he got sort of dropped on his back by Xavier Wilson, I believe, in one of those tackles. And then Jock Madden from the Broncos has been reported as possibly a pec injury as well, Brian. Do you want to go through the cramping side of things first with Reece Walsh and Adam Reynolds? Because that was sort of all the talk on the coverage for, God, it must have been the last 20 minutes or so. I was kind of pretty sick of hearing it by the time it was Vossie and Mick Annis talking over the top of each other. It was getting it was almost like recycling bin day. The jokes kept getting recycled. It was pretty tough listening there for a bit, wasn't it?
Mate, if I heard Charlie Horse once, 10 times, but yeah, look, like I think the thing with cramping here, there was a lot of people in my comments telling on themselves that they never had like severe cramping before. So everyone's like, oh, cramp, no big deal. Like, mate, cramping when it comes on in that kind of severity, the pain levels are huge. Like the damage level is so low, right? Like, and that, I think that's the thing is people are, you know, going, oh, there's no way these guys can play next week. And you know, how are they staying on the field and stuff like that? Cramping in those kind of instances is one of those things where the pain level is like a 9 to 10 out of 10, but the damage level is like, 0 or, you know, 0.5. So yeah, it is surprising to see, you know, something like that where they finished the game. They pulled up well this morning. They're apparently in little to no doubt for next week. But yeah, that cramping can be like that and the pain can be really, really quite significant. Now, just to cover off on a whole bunch of questions that I had about, you know, why did it happen? You know, how does pickle juice help? So why did it happen? The biggest reason for muscle cramping is neuromuscular fatigue is kind of, and cramping is one of those things where this is all, it's not theoretical, but they haven't really proven it because there was a few up until, you know, recent times, it was thought to be like hydration, dehydration. But now what they're sort of thinking and what a lot of the suggestion is that it's just fatigue between the nerves getting the muscles to fire. So those nerves get fatigued, they don't fire well, and then the muscle cramps up. And the reason, one of the reasons that they think this is the case is because of something like pickle juice. Because they used to think pickle juice, you know, people drink the pickle juice, it hydrates them, or, you know, the salt content of the pickle juice, you know, helps bring them back into the right, you know, levels and all that kind of thing. But it, like pickle juice, when it works almost immediately. So it was one of those things where even if you're getting it down into your gut, there's no way it is then getting to the muscle immediately for that to happen. So what they've come up with is the pickle juice is that kind of acidic, if you've ever had pickle juice, yeah, it's pretty rank. But when it goes into the mouth, there's actually a bunch of, like a bundle of nerve endings at the back of your throat. So when that pickle juice hits that bundle of nerve endings, it almost like fires like a reset into those nerve endings, which seems to settle down the cramping. And that's where that like neuromuscular fatigue comes in. So that's why we see a lot of it early in the season, right? Is because guys aren't match fit. You know, they're building into the season. So that fatigue can set on quickly. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be people saying, oh, but what about magnesium and, you know, but like fluid levels? That all plays a role. But I guess what they're saying is that like dehydration, if you're dehydrated, then neuromuscular fatigue becomes worse. If your salt content in your diet, or, you know, too much salt, too little salt, then that can affect the neuromuscular fatigue as well. So I think neuromuscular fatigue sounds like it's the crux of the problem, but then other things like hydration, diet, and Reece Walsh mentioned diet. Walsh has a few issues with vomiting during games, and by all accounts, they didn't show much of it on the telecast, but apparently he was vomiting for like most of the second half. So I'd say that probably had something to do with it there. But yeah, it's rare to see that many guys, you know, cramping up, and I think Walsh said we're going to have a word to the dietitian. So the dietitian might be in for a rocket from the Bronx because there seem to be a few of them cramping up. Before I move on to Coruscant or Madden, you got anything to add there, James, or did I nail all the science relatively?
No, well? I think you've nailed all the key points there, mate. I think there are a few little tidbits there that I wasn't even aware of from a neuro, like I guess that neuro sort of reset thing, because my understanding was it's all electrolyte imbalance and there was nothing much else more to it. So that's news for me and good info for me to be aware of as well.
Can thank Vossi and the fan for that one, because he wanted to do one on cramping, and even I was like, yeah, electrolyte imbalance, and started doing some research for it, and I was like, oh shit, and there was all this new research about, yeah, neuromuscular, and yeah, that's what they were thinking for, and it was only recent, and that was a couple of years ago, so it was something I learnt, and you know, just passing all that knowledge, mate. But Appy Coruscant with the back nerve pain, I think this is probably, there would be that many people listening to this show who would know what like jarring your back feels like, right? Where you jar your back, it's you jam up those joints in your back, the nerves get irritated and you get that spasming. And I think Benji put it really, really well in the post-match. He's like, when your back goes like that, when you get like that spasm, it's really hard to kind of overcome that. And this reminded me a lot of the infamous Melbourne Storm, don't diagnose our players without adequate information, because this was the injury that Cam Smith, he kind of got bent back, jarred up his back, it started to spasm, and he had to come off and couldn't go back on. And yeah, look, like really, really horrible at the time. We saw the tackle, well, if you follow me on socials, you saw the tackle that Coruscant got dumped pretty badly. That causes an irritation of the nerves. of the joints, it can get really, really sore and really hard to move around. And he was pretty limited after that tackle for the 10 minutes he stayed on, and obviously just couldn't keep going. But usually a relatively quick recovery time. You know, you can get on top of that pretty quickly if there's no damage, which I doubt there would be with that. So, like, if anything, he might miss a week, but I'd be shocked if he even missed a week, to be honest. Jock Madden with a peck. This is an interesting one, probably to me and you, James, or any physios or people listening, but this didn't look like a peck mechanism at all. So peck mechanism is usually arm hanging out to the side, you know, getting pulled back in a tackle, gripping on someone and wrestling them in a tackle, or like, you know, in the gym, you're doing a chest press and you feel the peck go. The video wasn't great, which is why I didn't post the video, because it was the zoomed out view and there was a player in between us and Jock Madden. So it was just like, I was like, even though you can see a little bit, this just isn't good. Like, yeah, as I said last week, I don't like to post something if it's not of value, and I don't think it was really valuable. But it looked more than anything like Jock Madden landed on the tip of his shoulder with his arm pinned to his side. And they were just like... they were just really feeling for his pec. He did sort of point around to the back of the shoulder at first, and they did feel around his AC joint, which would be more common. But yeah, there was a lot of work around his pec. So I'm quite interested here because the video does not match at all for what they are saying. Now, they are saying that they don't think it's a significant pec injury, but he's doubtful for next week. I just wonder whether it's some sort of referred pain or whether he's even like got like a burner that's referring pain into his pec potentially. I'm not really sure. This is a really interesting one for me, and I can't really tell you because A, the video wasn't great, but B, the mechanism just doesn't match up with what they are saying. So like, this is one where I would err on the side of it's not as bad as it, like, as you usually hear with pecs, in that my gut probably tells me I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the next, like, 1 to 2 weeks. But, yeah, it's a bit of a confusing one because the mechanism just doesn't match.
Yeah, a bit of a mystery. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But Broncos haven't been overly forthcoming with info, so we may not ever get the full story there. Ryan, who knows? We'll go on to the Cowboys-Panthers here next. So Scotty Sorensen and Moses Leota were ruled out pre-game. Sorensen with a knee and Moses Leota with a shoulder injury. I don't have much more detail apart from that. And then the only other injury out of this game was Tommy Chester with a hamstring injury. Looks like fairly high grade there. And I don't know if that was to the same side as he's had his ACL reconstruction on Brian either. Was it same side that he had the ACL? I don't know.
That's a good question, James. I'm not sure. And I don't, it wasn't confirmed whether he had a hamstring issue, though it was confirmed that he's had issues with his hamstring. So Todd Payton said post-match that he's had multiple hamstring strains in his history. So whether that has come post a hamstring graft for the ACL, that would be interesting, once again, whether we ever get that info or not. But yeah, I'd say at least 4 to 6 weeks for Tom Chester, because even he said himself, yeah, it's a pretty bad one. And if he's had hammies in the past, he knows. So 4 to 6 weeks, I think you'd almost be happy if it comes out with that, rather than like a 6 to 10 week, you know, higher grade kind of one. Scotty Sorensen and Moses Leota, another one with very little info from the Panthers, though I have heard through little whispers that Scotty Sorensen aggravated that MCL sprain that he suffered or just came back from at training. They were hopeful when I last heard, this was later during the week, this week just gone, that they were hopeful it wasn't too bad and that he'd only miss 1 to 2 weeks. But yeah, we haven't had that confirmed yet. And then Moses Leota, the only information I've got on this is James Fisher-Harris post-match was interviewed and said, yeah, he should be back next week. So take from that what you will.
All right, very good. I think only interesting one there with Tommy Chester getting hurt, Brian, would be Viliama Vialia from a super coach point of view. Young, come across from the Warriors. I think there was a bit of delay in him getting over to Townsville initially, I think was reported, with passport issues or visa issues or something along those lines. It might not be worth, it might just be worth keeping in your black book there of names from a standard point of view. I probably wouldn't go looking in a draft sort of format yet, but he might be one that's in that sort of lower price range. It might be worthwhile. Last game of the round here, or sorry, second last game of the round, my apologies, was Dolphins v Knights. So out of this one, Jesse Bromwich with a calf injury, Jacob Saifidi, difficult to tell here from the video. This was quite an unusual one where it looks like sort of maybe it's a calf, maybe it's an Achilles, maybe it's an ankle. And Jed Cartwright was reported as an ankle injury as well. Detail, I guess, Brian, do you want to just cover off the probably low-hanging fruit there with Jesse Bromwich to start off with?
Yeah, mate. I think Vossi said in commentary the old man's injury, and yeah, unfortunately, it is, as it's one of the risk factors for calf injuries. One of the most predictive risk factors is older age. So yeah, Jesse Bromwich, it was weird. I watched the footage back and he was moving around pretty well before he came off, but then it was almost like he came off and he was absolutely cooked. So I didn't see a mechanism, you know, whether it's, and the ice seemed to be like very high up and very lateral. So I don't know whether he copped a cork potentially or whether it is a strain. I mean, the poor old fins, they're really struggling with injuries. So I think we will, I was on a podcast during the week about the Finns and just saying how it's really good that they can bring in like the likes of Trey Fuller and be like a Queensland Cup All-Stars team. And I'm like, I think they're heading that way with the number of guys they've got out, because Jesse's going to be out. Kenny's going to be out with his concussion as well. So it's just going to be, but look, I'm all about the Q Cup All-Stars, mate. Get them all in there. All the Q Cup boys. Valence can play second row. Fantastic. Jacob Saifidi, as you said, we like strange one in that you look at the video and I'm like, oh yeah, he's done his Achilles. Like I thought he jumped up, he pushed off, he felt for the back of his ankle near his Achilles, and I'm like, oh man, that the only thing he didn't turn around and look, which I know sounds like a weird thing, but usually that's what happens when you rupture it. So that's why I was kind of like, oh, okay, maybe it's not a rupture, maybe it's just a strain. The thing that makes this even, I guess, even weirder and stranger is the fact that he got assessed by the trainer and then got told, like, to try and run it out, continue, and he tried to run it out and was like, nah, I'm cooked. So that would be very surprising if it's a rupture, because usually like a trainer's going to identify that there's no Achilles hanging on anymore. So like I'm thinking at the moment like a partial tear of the Achilles potentially, or even like one of those tendons like a tip post or something like that that runs down in and around the Achilles. But I think you said off air, you know, potentially like a calf strain at that musculotendinous junction. He just seemed to be holding down a bit lower. So like I'm hopeful at the moment that it's not a rupture. That's kind of where I'm sitting at the moment. But still, like a partial tear or strain of the Achilles could see him miss several weeks. So he's not out of the woods just yet. Jed Cartwright, his ankle was something he'd been carrying, because I went back and looked at the mechanism and it didn't seem like much at all. And he was really, really bothered by it. And they said post-match that he'd been carrying it. So it's obviously an aggravation of a pre-existing issue. So yeah, I'd be surprised to see him back up next week.
I don't see relevant things for the Finns here, mate. What do you see their team shaping up like next week? I guess, is there anyone expected back on deck? Are we going to see more Oren Keeley? I don't really know what they're going to sort of look like there for the Dolphins. Hey?
Yeah, well, we've got a question on Flegler, so I'll touch on him. But like, I don't think he's back anytime soon. It sounds like he's a fair way off. So, I literally think it's going to be kick up guys like that. Well, J-Wall, who, you know, definitely not a Q-Cup standard. Old Jared Wallace, like, he's one of the premier props in the NRL. But Hubner, I think, as well, came up from the Capras, CQ Capras, and he made his debut a couple of weeks ago, so potentially he's there. But, mate, it's slim pickings at the Finns. Like, it is, yeah, it's pretty dire straits. I will say that I cheated on my team and I tipped the Knights today by 4 and nailed it. So I climbed up the ladder in my work comp because, they're just not in a good way, unfortunately. But even though they beat Parra last week, but I still am in disbelief as to how that happened, because they're very true.
Yeah. Tell you what, if you took the punt on Trey Fuller at fullback and Supercoach, you were handsomely rewarded today. He can play footy, can't he, Brian? I know Kick we talked about last week, mate. About short king season, but there's something about watching the little dude do the business in NRL. It doesn't get any better than that. Final game of the round was the Raiders and Sharks, Brian, and we don't have any injuries to cover from we can sort of wrap up round eight now and go straight into the Patreon questions. So like we always talk about, patreon.com/NRL physio. If you want these questions answered every week on the podcast, or you want to have some general life advice, then get around Brian there on Patreon as you normally do. $5 a month, value deluxe. Question number one, Brian. So question is about Sean Johnson and his Achilles issue. Are you holding him or selling him to Nathan Cleary? What's your plan with Sean Johnson as a fervent Sean Johnson enthusiast and rosterer in standard formats?
Mate, I think you're going to talk about the epic SJ call that we both made, when Cleary suffered his injury. Like, SJ has just been absolute gold for us, and he's almost a straight swap to Cleary. I'll throw to you in a second because I know what you're going to do. I think at the moment I've got one boost left. I'm probably going to use it this week, to be honest. And hot take, I'm still tossing up between Cleary and one other guy in terms of, like, I'm thinking potentially I leave it one more week because SJ does have the Knights. The Knights look good against the Finns today. But I just wonder, like, the Warriors have got to click in at some point, and I just wonder whether SJ, I hold him for one more week, let Cleary get past those 2 weeks of, hot, like, increased re-injury, and then go. So I'm still a bit torn. I would say if you put a gun to my head and said, what am I doing right now, I'm probably not going to do it this week, and I'm going to do it next week. But I think it's a pretty rock-solid, and I'm sure you're going to tell me why it's a pretty rock-solid move. But, yeah, I think I'm okay with people holding it for a week, and the justification I would give you if you're an SJ or a Jerome Hughes owner, and, you know, why is literally those first 2 weeks back for a hand hamstring injury, it's around that 10 to 12% re-injury rate, and then by the third week it drops down below 4%. So there is a fair drop-off from that second to third week historically. So yeah, that would be my justification for it. But James, I'm probably stealing a little bit from Supercoach Corner a little bit, but what would your movements be on Cleary, SJ to Cleary?
Yeah, we are stealing a little bit, Brian, but I reckon we just lean into it and just go for it. But we talked about bringing SJ in at the time Cleary got injured. So at the time, trading him at 662, and then he's gone scores of 75, 112, 95, 68, and 93 this week. One of the best shouts on the Magic Sponge nearly of all time. That is a heck of a run that he's gone on. He, despite going so well for the last 5 weeks, I think it's the perfect time to go straight back to Nathan Cleary. The Panthers have the Bunnies on Thursday night. I think the Panthers could put up 60. And I think Nathan Cleary had a quiet game against the Cowboys by his standards. I think he'd be looking to make amends. I just think Nathan Cleary is an absolute no-brainer. Last year is burned deep into my brain where I was running with Cleary, but I missed out on Nico. And then as soon as Nico kept going ballistic, I was not having a good time. My last boost I'm going to use is this week, and I'm going to bring Cleary in with a couple of others in center wing. I think you just don't overthink this. I think if Cleary's available, you get him in ASAP. He's one of the high-scoring players. You really want to hit those VC and C options to make up ground, which is really what I've been chasing. And I've been lucky to get some pretty good scores from captain and vice-captain in the last few weeks. But I think him on the Thursday night with a VC is a solid-as option. Sean Johnson's done his job. He's going to be managing the Achilles now. I think all signs point to Nathan Cleary. I'm happy to take a little bit of risk this week, even when he's, you know, only a couple of weeks back off the hamstring, no Brian. So my call would be sell, get Nathan Cleary into your team ASAP. Don't overthink it. He was the number one or number two overall draft pick this year for a good reason. He's going to be averaging in that sort of, you know, 85 to 95 echelon, which there's very few other players that can really match it apart from, you know, obviously Nico. Tom Trbojevic has had a week here and there, but he doesn't really have the ceiling that those guys have based on this year either that I can sort of see. Pong has gone, you know, long term. Reece Walsh has given up the kicking boots. I think you really need to find the big dogs and get them in ASAP would be my call there. What do you reckon?
I reckon you've convinced me, mate. I still am fine if you want to do it for one. Who I think the Storm have got a pretty soft a soft game this week as well.
Yeah, so they've got the Titans. Yeah, so that's fair. If you got Jerome Hughes, I think that's probably not unreasonable because it's a revenge game for Jerome Hughes as well. Obviously, former Titan player coming
Mate,
up.
Mate, he was nearly a future Titan player with all the reports fighting around this week. But yeah, anyway.
Depending on what you read. Yeah, absolutely. But no, I think Cleary is an absolute no-brainer this week. He'll be the final boost, which I think is a worthy final boost from my point of view. Question number two, Brian, we'll move on. So is Tom Trbojevic carrying an injury? Involvement was down. Thinking about going on to Scotty Drinkwater this week. What do you think about Tommy Turbo? I didn't think he was really that bad. I think it was just one of those games where he missed out from points and tries by just a smidge there. He's had a few games like that this year, so he could have had a, you know, an 80, 90 point game. Obviously, Pennicini tackled him off the ball, which was a try scoring opportunity. I think there was another one. It was a forward pass as well, so he wasn't really that far away from scoring a bigger sort of week from a super coach point of view. I didn't think Tom was that bad this week. I don't know. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, mate, this went off in the Patreon chat over the weekend. Mm. I think there was quite a few probably just frustrated owners and captainers who were, you know, going, he's got to be carrying an injury, you know, 50 points with a try. I think he scored 80 odd points last week with two tries. Look, my take is that I don't know if he's carrying an injury, so I'm not about to claim like inside knowledge or anything here or there. The big thing, my position on him is that A, I think he gets held to, because of his history, everyone's got a bit of PTSD in that when he kind of has like a down game, his involvement's down in a game, it's like, oh, it's an injury. It's got to be an injury. Whereas other guys, you know, fullbacks have those kind of games. And Turbo has had those kind of games in the past where his base hasn't been fantastic, but he's made up for it, you know, with massive scoring potential. I think A, the injury history, but B, everyone sort of has 2021 still in their mind. And it's like, you know, when he doesn't score those big things, it's like, oh, he's no good. And like coming into this week, he had the third highest average of all, well, you know, your main fullbacks. And he had a 3-round average of above 90. So he'd scored really, really well. I take everyone back to a month ago where he had a bad game, that game against the Dragons. Everyone's going, he's definitely carrying an injury. He's not in a good spot. And then he rolled off, yeah, a 3-round average of above 90. So, look, I think you, and you brought it up before we even talked about it, how I don't think his ceiling is as high as it was in the past. Like, I don't think you can expect that, you know, 100 plus average from him. I still think he's very capable of like a 85 to 90 as an average, but I think that above 100 point, you have to accept that. The other thing that you have to take into consideration, and this is something, once again, more physio nerdy, is that people have brought up that he looks a bit limited in his running. Once again, I don't know whether he's carrying an injury or not, but he observably, since he came back from the States, had changed his running gait. So he has changed the way that he runs, I assume because they want to, you know, they found something that they want to limit and they want to try and, you know, they think that's contributing to his injury risk. But he has changed his running style in lieu of all the hamstring injuries. So he doesn't look as smooth out there anymore, but I think that is a conscious decision rather than I'm compensating for something. I think they have identified something. So that, I think in general, he just doesn't look as good out there. It doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't as good. He just doesn't look as good because it looks a little bit more awkward. A bit like, you know, your Justin Hodgeses or your even Jacob Kiraz recently. Like, there are some guys who can still run really well. They just don't look great because that's their running style. So I think that is contributing. In terms of selling to Drinkwater, I think regardless, I've got Tommy Turbo down as a sell in, I think it's 2 weeks' time, or 2 or 3 weeks, because they go from having they've got a soft few games coming up. They've got Canberra at home at Brookie next week, with no way am I selling Tommy Turbo next week, or this week, unless something comes out that he is carrying an injury, then I'll consider it. But against Canberra at Brookie, hell no. And then the week after that, I think, was a good one as well. But then they get like the Broncos and the Storm. Then he's into Origin. They've got Panthers as well. So I think it's way too much money to be sitting in your fullback spot against though that caliber of player, and then into potential origin selection as well. So I'm kind of eyeing off Drinkwater over the next 2 weeks. I'm fine with it if you want to go early, because I think Drinky's got a couple of good matchups as well. But my thinking at the moment is waiting until that two weeks is through, and then probably targeting a sell then. What about yourself, mate? How are you feeling as a Turbo owner?
Yeah, it's good thinking, because Drinkwater has a break even this week of 156. So he'll leak a fair bit of points cash this week and probably the next week. So I don't think Drinkwater's an urgent bring in when you got Turbo on a couple of good matchups. I'm tipping him to play fullback for the Blues this year. I think he'll be the number one for New South Wales. Don't know why. That's just a vibe thing. I just think Tedesco may be on the way out there. And I think when you look at the centre and wing options, the New South Wales have got some pretty solid options there, but I think Turbo gives them that really good point of difference. He's a big body. He's a big game player. He gives you an aerial threat, not dissimilar to Zach Lomax as well. I think that's a pretty attractive thing if you're bombing away midfield above Reece Walsh. He's done that in the past in Origin, getting over the top of Callum Ponga. I just think that maybe Michael Maguire goes, well, who is the alpha fullback? I'm going to bring him in. I think that may actually be Tom Trbojevic, maybe playing him there rather than centre, rather than wing. It'd be interesting to see what happens there and then the selection front, but I think that'd be the way it sort of goes there. So I think Turbo wasn't really on my radar to trade at all, but I think the trade to Drinkwater is a pretty logical one. Drinky's got the high ceiling. The Cowboys, generally speaking, have been putting up reasonable attacking sort of points in attacking games. He's got a good buy coverage draw as well. I think I don't know if he buys till round 16, I think, Brian. I think it's so he plays all the way through there, which is absolute gold if you're chasing that. Obviously, if you wanted to go a week early, all good. I was thinking about going a couple of weeks for Ruben Garrett because he had 149 break even this week, which he hit. So it just goes to show, if you think someone has a good matchup, you just bring him in and not worry too much about the cash. Because, yeah, Ruben Garrick and the other one was Jermaine Asako as well. Hit his 108 break even or whatever it was. Two guys I had my eye on, and I was like, if they can just leak a little bit, that'd be prime. But, yeah, guns are guns.
Mate, I chose between those eventually. Two and Isaac Tungo. And, of course, I went with Tungo perfect. Out of the three. Fantastic.
That's why we're good at what we do here, Brian, because we own our errors and we have good integrity on those type of things. So we'll move on to question number three here. Clint Gutherson looked a bit hobbled with the knee that we mentioned last week from the Patreon questions here. Is this something he can manage all year, or is he going to have time off for it at some point in the season? Probably a little bit hard to know, isn't it, Brian? But certainly he didn't look super free and easy the other night, Gutho, did he?
Mate, literally, my answer to this question is put a blindfold on. Well, before you put a blindfold on, put a piece of paper up on the wall with fantastic performance game, crappy hobbled performance game, not playing at all in three circles. Put your blindfold on, get a dart and throw some darts at the wall, and that's kind of where it could land. It each week, it's going to be so varied in terms of what it could be. He could, like, look at Jason Taumalolo, who I think is probably not even in as bad a spot as Gutho, because Gutho's having to, like, have his knee get drained and these kind of things. But Taumalolo had such a good game against Penrith.
He's great.
Like, so good, but then has been relatively crappy, like, you know, in weeks, like, up and down. Gutho's just going to be all over the shop. I think at the moment, because his knee sounds like it's in that really aggravated state, I wouldn't expect anything big from him anytime soon. He could barely kick the ball. If they could convert, they nearly would have won the game against Manly, I reckon, if either that or Mike Acevo didn't have such a, you know, brain explosion. But, yeah, it's just week to week, it is going to be all over the shop. It is something he can potentially manage all year and not have to take time off as such, but his performance is going to suffer if that's the case. So it's one of those things where you've got to try and, as the Eels, you've got to try and balance, do we give him time off, which means that when he comes back, his performance will be better, or is a Clint Gutherson at 75-80% more valuable to us that we just kind of get him through than the replacement level? I would probably say he should have some time off at some point, especially if Blaise Talangi, you know, is looking pretty good. It's a clusterfuck, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. It could be anything.
Yeah, I can't really shed any more light on it than you have there, Brian. I think it's just a situation you probably just want to steer clear of from a Supercoach perspective if you're a draft or standard rosterer. If you're an Eels fan, you're just going to have to grin and bear this one, unfortunately, and see how it plays out. I don't think it's going to be a high upside thing. It's going to be probably a difficult watch at some point in time. But also on Gutho, another patron question about Gutho. He's getting a bit of a flogging here in Patreon, but he also had sort of like an entire roll of tape down his right arm. It looked like his arm was almost mummified. What do you reckon is going on there, Brian? I didn't notice that, to be honest.
Yes, I went back, the knee. 100%. Yeah. So I went back and had a look, and he's had the same elbow strapping since round one. Didn't have it in the preseason. It looks like it's to prevent extension, full extension of the elbow. So I assume whether it's in training or in that final preseason game, he suffered a hyperextended elbow and he's just playing through it. The reason it went, it did go a little bit further down, but literally if you have a look at past weeks, it only goes down probably like a couple of inches further. So in previous weeks, it looks like they were having trouble keeping it on, like getting it to stay on. So I would more than likely say that they've just taken it down the wrist and then like wrapped it around the wrist to kind of fix it better. But I would say he's playing through an elbow issue.
Yep, all good, Brian. Last question from patron here is about Tommy Flegler. This patron, he's a draft owner. How bad is his shoulder injury? Do we have any more good information about Tommy Flegler and the shoulder, Brian?
Yeah, mate, I think it got confirmed this week, kind of what we had spoken about and suspected on this show for a while, that it wasn't like an AC joint issue, which is what they had said. And, you know, he was named for the next week and they were like, oh, it's an AC joint. We, from the mechanism and how it was behaving, we had kind of thought it was more like the actual joint itself. And it sounds like now he's actually done some nerve damage to the shoulder and they're describing it as a really, really bad shoulder burner or stinger. Look, that is like an understatement, to be honest, because very, very rarely have we seen something take this long to come good from like a burner stinger kind of thing. Like he has really obviously damaged or aggravated those nerves in his shoulder quite significantly, because apparently he's still struggling to get the strength into it, to get the feeling into his shoulder and down into his arm as well. So those nerves have been, really, really badly sort of aggravated there. So how bad is it? The problem with nerves, I hate to say it, they're so unpredictable. This isn't like a grade 2 hamstring that we see come back in 4 to 6 weeks. This is an injury that I cannot think of another player who I've seen with an injury like this, where it's like shoulder nerve damage and he's struggling for strength and weakness, like, and feeling in his shoulder and his arm for multiple weeks now. Like, that's 3 to 4 weeks. So, yeah, how bad is his shoulder? It's not ideal. Wayne said this week that Flegler's probably the furthest away of any of those, like, injured brigade from the Finns, which is like Hammer's not due back for at least another 2 to 3 weeks. Like, I think, like Wayne saying that, he's the furthest away. I think he's in doubt for Origin, it sounds like. So, look, as a draft owner, I mean, yeah, like if there's somebody who believes in him and you can get near full price, like maybe you do that. But front row is a bit of a crappy position. So you probably, if you're confident of making finals, I'd probably want to hold on to him. Where do you kind of sit on it?
It depends how bad you are. Like, I don't think moving on from him is the end of the world, Brian, because it's only going to be like a 4 to 5 point average difference. So I don't think you really need to hang tight there from a draft point of view. Weird one with what do they call it? Like a nerve injury there. Like, we're not talking like plexus traction thing. Are we talking suprascap nerve, or we just haven't really heard anything, have we? It seems like an unusual, I guess, development from when we first, when Wayne was just straight down the barrel, just saying AC joint, AC joint, AC joint for everyone. It was just ACs for everyone in that press conference. One of the great Wayne Bennett presses. How are you, Wayne, by the way? Watching the sponge. So yeah, interesting one with whenever I hear nerve type things there, suprascap nerve can be a little bit fickle. But if it's like a plexus tractiony thing, they can be really irritable and really hard to settle. So not a good scenario there. If it was me, I would personally probably, depends how deep your league is. If you've got a 12 team, you might hold, because there might be absolute garbage on waivers. If you're in a 10 team, maybe less. I'd probably move on and see what else is available there. Would be my lane.
Yeah, mate, I like it. Now, we've just got a question through as we're recording, so I'll just read it out. How much of a concern is Coruscant? A few little niggles over the last few weeks. Is he a sell or a hold in Classic? His matchups coming up aren't bad, so if he's fit enough to keep, I feel that he could be a good hold over the Origin period. I'm not trading him at this point in time. He was the Tigers' shining light in that Broncos game on Saturday. I don't think he got... Well, he got robbed of a try in what I think tries are, but by the letter of the law, it's actually not a try because of this whole, regrouping bull crap shit, whatever it is. But, yeah, he was just so dangerous, and I don't think he was obviously pretty over the hamstring/quad issue that he'd been dealing with, and this back thing is just a contact back injury. It's nothing to do with, the hamstring or the quad. So provided he's named next week, I'm not moving him on. I'm going to keep him at least for the next couple of weeks because I think with the goal kicking and with how he looks eye test-wise, I'm really happy. All right, straight to Supercoach Corner. James, mate, we went through your SJ to Cleary. Hit me with how you went this week, and then what else are you doing with your other two trades to burn that final boost?
Yep, so week 8 just gone, Brian. You got me in the bickies again, so good bloke credits coming your way. So I've gone 12-26 pre-updates. I captain Nico Hines, so pretty happy about that. I've been pretty fortunate on my skipper front for the last few weeks, so I've sort of been getting a few green arrows off the rankings there, which is pretty nice. So last week I did Callum Ponga for Reece Walsh, I think as every other man and his dog did. That wasn't a super exciting trade. I also traded one of my favourite players this year, Tommy Talau, I was going to go to Chevy Stewart, but at the last minute, when I noticed team list and I saw Simi Sasangi getting named at starting second row with the negative 40 break even, I feel like their job security is about the same. So I went Simi Sasangi, probably against my better judgment there. But fortunately, he got an 80-minute edge roll. He only got 38 points, but I think it wasn't the worst play. I do worry about Chevy Stewart being 18 years old and having a long-term position there. There's not too many 18-year-olds that come into NRL that are ready to rip and tear and keep those positions long-term. And I think if they're really struggling for creativity at the 7-6 spot, I think they'll go to Jordan Rapana or Seb Chris pretty quick. So I'm not super confident Chevy Stewart will be there. So that's why I went Simi Sasangi. I just thought, well, if he's got negative 40 break even, I'll get a few points this week, get a bit of cash. And if he can get one more week on a bench or just a little bit of time, I might be able to flick him for about an 80-100K profit. That was the plan with him. So that was something that hopefully works out for me. This week, I'm using the final boost. So like we talked about earlier, I'm going Sean Johnson and Nathan Cleary. That is definitely locked and loaded. And the other two, I've got 580K in the bank, so I should be able to make this happen, is go Ethan Strange and James Schiller to Jermaine Asako and Jacob Carraz. So they pump me up in center wing and they both cover round 13. So I think round 13 then I've still got, I think, 12 or 13 players as it stands at the moment. So I'm pretty reasonably poised there from that point of view. So that's what I'm going to do this week, Brian, because I'm still, I think you, every week that you're getting me in the center wing spot because you've got some absolutely big dogs there rolling at good points for you. And I just don't have that at the moment. So I really need to get a couple of other big guns in there and get some good matchups in Jacob Carraz. And I think Jermaine Asako, I really wanted to see him dip a bit this week, but I think he was just due for a score. And you know what Jermaine's like, if he can get a few tries and actually kick a bit straighter, then he'll be in the points even a little bit more. So the Dolphins have really good buy coverage, obviously. So do the Bulldogs. They've just come off the bye as well. So I think now's the week for Carraz. Now the week for Asako because he's probably at his price. And I think Nathan Cleary will drop a bit. Sean Johnson will be maxed out. It lines up pretty well there to use all three, Brian. I can't really see any reason not to hold on to the boost there. I think that's what they're for. How did you go this week, Brian? I think you're in the 1300s this week, so you went real, real big in a score this week, hey?
Oh, mate, I think looking across the leagues that I'm in, there is some huge scores this week because, up until Captain Hines, I didn't think I was doing that well, and then obviously that's kind of just made my week. But I brought in Tungo, Walsh, and Max Plath at 5'8". I was going to bring in Harry Grant, and once Harry Grant scored 90, I was cursing it, but then mate, my $300,000 Maxi Plath fins up, just knocked out 72 in base stats, and I am loving life at the moment. So I'll keep him there and just kind of ride that wave. Yeah, Tungo was the big disappointment. Like, obviously, I kind of, a bit like what you said, I thought the Cows were a pretty good matchup for him, but yeah, it just didn't happen. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with him even moving forward. Just, he gives you that round 13 coverage as well. And to your point, like, I just think centre wing is just where I want. I almost want six guns and one cheapy is kind of where I'm heading in centre wing. Like, that's kind of, and even if I can get seven guns, I want to do that. I want to have three reserves, or probably not, because you want two fullbacks, two halfbacks, and I want two centres as they're my four ideal reserves. So that's kind of what I've got in my head at the moment, is like my ideal team structure. And that's kind of what I'm heading towards, because I'm looking at like that Jacob Gagai is there this week, low break even, basement price. But I almost, like, David Armstrong looks so freaking good today for the Knights, and he's basement price as well. He's playing at fullback. Like, yeah, I just, and with Alex Johnson to come back for the Rabbits, I just wonder whether he goes back into the left wing and Gagai goes out to the right wing. Is that as fruitful? Yeah, I've just got it that I probably want David Armstrong in 2 weeks, so I'm going to skip Gagai, but I just want guns in the centres. So I'm probably going to boost again. I've got mine Garrick for sure. I've got mine Kiraz as well. They're probably the two that stick out for me at this point in time. I think I'm going to either go, I don't want to go RTS to him if I can avoid it. I've got Blaze Talungi standing there and about 400 grand in the bank. So I probably want to go Blaze Talungi straight up to a Garrick or a Kiraz. I want to get Fenua Blake potentially in the front row for Taylan May is my other thought, just because I'm a bit over Trent Robertson ball, just, you know, playing, mucking up the minutes. I did have my eye on the young fella from the Tigers, but I just didn't think, he did get sin bin, but I just didn't think his scoring was that great on the edge this week, so he's a bit of a wait and watch for me. But I'm probably, you've convinced me on Cleary, so I think I'm probably going to go Cleary. So then I'm probably tossing up between AFB and Jaden Brayley at hooker, mainly because I just want, a bit like what I'm saying, like, I just want all my money to be tied up in centres, halves, and fullback. So, like, someone like my backup hooker being 400 and whatever thousand that Joey Lussick is, that's just wasted money for me. So I want to kind of go down. I don't want to nuff out completely, but Brayley, he has pretty good buy coverage. He's playing around 13. I don't think he's going to set the world on fire, but he, you know, he averaged 50, 55 as your backup hooker. You're paying I think he'd be about maybe 350, 360 for him, and I just kind of set and forget for the season. So I'm just eyeing that off purely, like, I'm not sitting here because Brayley isn't someone who I see as being like the best buy in the world as such, but I just kind of have in my head that I want as much money as humanly possible going towards my centers, my fullback, and my halves. And that's kind of how I'm functioning my trades at the moment, because that just seems to be where Supercoach is at the moment. I don't know, like, you probably, and I mean, you mentioned it without me even mentioning it to you, just about having those guns in the center wing. But do you think that's a good kind of plan to have in your head, is just to try and get as much money in those spots?
Yeah, I think that's my big fall down this year, was I went really skint there at the start of the year, and it just hasn't worked out for me. So now I'm just chasing my tail, trying to get all I can into there. There are a few guys I've got eyes on, Brian, in that sort of position there. I just had a little note here just to keep an eye on these people. So obviously Garrick and Asako were the ones this week, just hit their crazy high break evens, which, you know, they are what they are now. But I think Greg Marzu's on the slide. Isaac Tunga is going to lose some money. Dane Gagai has got a high break even. Dom Young's going to shed heaps of cash. And then Scotty Drinkwater and James Tedesco are going to be real cheap in a bid. Grant's bottom out at hooker. Depends if you want to go that way. But I think, like, AJ Brimson at centre is a good shout as well. If he's playing fullback consistently, getting him in the centre wing spot for sub 600, could be worse. So I think there's a lot of good options in centre wing. And to your point about getting, you know, at least six guns or even seven guns and playing the matchups, like a centre wing's probably one of the more predictable places that you can play matchups for try upside. But it, I think it's definitely the way you got to go about it, to be honest, because there's not really too many like standouts at second row apart from Dave Fifita's probably in a tier of his own. But then he's got to get through like the origin period, not going 80. Samuel Fainu's not a bad shout at front row because he played 70 minutes apart from the sin bin. So he didn't score real well. But, you know, if you've got an 80-minute front rower who plays on an edge, even on the Tigers, I still think that's a really good get as a, like a downgrade for some people or even a sideways trade from, yeah, like a Terrell May or even straight across from like a Sam Hughes is probably not too far from that price point either. So they're probably not bad, but I think when I'm using a boost, I really want to have like Isako is a genuine keeper, Cleary's a genuine keeper all year, and who else was I saying before I was going to get my team? I've completely gone blank there, Brian.
Just Kiraz.
Kiraz is the other one. I think they're just the three ones that I really want to have, and they're valuable trades to make at this point in time of the year, giving away the boost, whatever. You can't take them with you.
Mate, as you know, I'm a tradeaholic. I just figure go for it. Especially now with like 13, you know, only 13 counting for the buys. Like I think I've got both the first two buy rounds covered as my team stands right now. So I've even got room to kind of move around and do those kind of things. And look, you know, the buy, like origin selection and stuff's going to throw up stuff and maybe it comes back to haunt me. But I've always said, you know, like if you just very, very rarely hear about guys coming from the clouds, you know, 10,000, 20,000 and winning the thing. And at the end of the day, I've been on record many times with Classic being something that I, you know, have probably prioritized secondary to draft in the past. But yeah, all I want to do in Classic is just win the whole thing. Like if I'm not trying to win the whole thing, then what's the point? Like I don't think anybody listens to this show because I was ranked 1500, you know, or whatever. I don't think that matters to many people. I think it's, yeah, you just got to try and win it. That's at the end of the day. And so that's where I'm under no, illusions to think that I'm very low chance of winning it, but you may as well have that. That's how I like to trade and how I like to play is to try and win the thing. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to get as many guns in the center wing to be able to do that. So that's where I'm at. But guys, that is a wrap for this week. If you like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend. If you want more info, patreon.com/NRLphysio. James, I'm going to mention it again to finish the show. That's one more week closer to Magic Round. I can taste it. I've got my jersey sorted. I said last week my hat is a gimpy premiership hat, but I've got a pretty sick Dolphins hat coming. So I'm thinking I'm going to go on the Friday night and go gimpy and just like wear gimpy kit. And then Saturday I'm going to wear my Dolphins kit. So I'll see how we go. But yeah, mate, I'm sure you're getting keen for it as well. Let's just talk to the listeners about how keen we are for Magic Round like we do every week.
Yeah, as always, exceptionally keen. I am a little bit apprehensive, Brian. I haven't had a lick of alcohol in about 5 weeks. There is a very, very good chance that I am going to be in big trouble early on the mid-strength beers, I reckon. Like, it's going to rock and roll me in a big way. I've got, how would you say it? I've got dad stamina now on the drink. It's not like younger years where you can sit and sesh. I am going to be pretty useless pretty quick. In saying that, cannot wait. It's going to be very enjoyable. We don't often get a blowout anymore, and I'm keen to blow all the way out.
Mate, I think the best judge of where we're at with that is last year, I remember, it was halftime of the second game where we all looked at each other and went, rums? Rums, yep, okay, and that's when we called it. You know, it's 6 o'clock. We're already needing sugar to keep us awake because we've had 3 beers and we're really struggling. I reckon it could be even quicker. It might be halftime of the first game if we have a couple of beers over lunch. We're almost asleep. And
might start there.
I think that's when it's dangerous. But as always, drink responsibly, but enjoy yourself at Magic Round. And if you see either of our ugly mugs rolling around, come and have a chat. But otherwise, guys, yeah, enjoy up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.